All right, so welcome to this deep dive. And today we're going to be looking at something a little bit different in Jeremiah. You know, we've been going through all this judgment and exile, and it's like we're finding this hidden room full of hope and restoration.
Yes.
So we're talking about chapters 30 to 33,
That's right.
the Book of Consolation. And to help us unpack this, we're going to be looking at some fascinating insights from Dr. Gary Yates, a leading scholar on Jeremiah.
A brilliant scholar.
So I'm excited to jump in
Me
here.
too.
So what's so intriguing about the prophets, especially Jeremiah, is that they're not just doom and gloom.
That's right, yeah.
Like there's this whole cycle they present,
Yeah,
right?
there's a four-part message that the prophets bring, including Jeremiah.
Okay.
And that four-part message is sin, repentance, judgment, and restoration.
Oh, okay. So it's not just fire and brimstone. There's a melody of hope woven through it all.
That's right, yeah.
Now, is this a new concept or where does this come from?
Well, it's not a new concept.
Yeah.
If you think back to Deuteronomy chapter 30, Moses lays out this pattern for Israel
Okay.
that they will stray from God, they'll face the consequences, but ultimately God is going to bring them back.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of like a blueprint for their entire relationship with God.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm already starting to see these glimmers of hope, even in the earlier chapters of Jeremiah, like those little hints of light poking through
Right,
the
exactly.
storm clouds.
Yeah, like in Jeremiah chapter 3, verses
Yeah.
15 through 18, where God promises faithful shepherds to guide his people.
Okay.
A reunited Israel, north and south, finally coming back together,
Right.
and Jerusalem secure as God's throne.
Wow, that's a beautiful picture
It really is.
of stability amidst the chaos.
Yeah, amidst all of that chaos, right in the
Yeah.
middle of all that judgment.
Yes. And then we got Jeremiah 23:3. You know, you've got all these warnings about corrupt leaders. But then this promise pops up. God will gather the scattered remnant of his people and raise up a righteous leader from the line of David.
Yeah.
It almost feels like a foreshadowing of the Messiah.
Yes. And if you think about it this way, like you're going through a really challenging time in your life and it just feels overwhelming.
Yeah.
But there's this little voice inside of you saying, it's going to be okay.
Right?
You're going to get through this.
Yeah, I like that.
That's what these early promises are like for the Israelites.
Okay.
It's a reminder that God hasn't abandoned them.
He's still there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's dive into this Book of Consolation now, chapters 30 to 33.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned that Dr. Yates believes this was probably a separate scroll originally.
Yeah, he does. And I think that emphasizes how important this message of hope was.
Right.
It wasn't just a footnote. It
Yeah.
was like its own distinct message of comfort and promise.
Right.
Now, some scholars question the authenticity of these chapters because they seem so different from the rest of Jeremiah.
Oh, wow. So they think somebody just like slipped in some happy thoughts later on.
Yeah, that's one theory.
Wow.
But Dr. Yates makes this compelling argument that no prophetic book focuses solely on judgment.
Okay.
There's always this thread of salvation woven through it.
Okay, so like a golden thread running through a tapestry.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
So even with a prophet like Amos,
Yes.
he's known for some pretty intense pronouncements
Intense. Yeah, that's a good word for him.
against Israel's sin.
Yeah, but even Amos, in the very last verses of his book,
Okay.
offers this vision of God rebuilding David's fallen tabernacle.
Okay.
It's a powerful reminder that God's judgment always has a redemptive purpose.
Wow, that's awesome.
It is.
Okay, so we know there's hope, but how is it delivered? Now, Dr. Yates talks about two main types of messages,
Yes.
something about oracles and portrayals, I think.
Yeah, he distinguishes between what he calls salvation oracles
Okay.
and salvation portrayals. And he says a salvation oracle is like a lifeline thrown to somebody who's drowning. It's a
Oh.
direct promise of deliverance
Okay.
from a specific crisis.
And these oracles often include like those powerful fear not commands,
Right.
right? Like a divine pep talk.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And they highlight the contrast between the present hardship and the coming salvation. Like, I know things look really bad right now,
Yeah.
but hold on, I'm about to turn things around.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so then what are these salvation portrayals? Are they more like big picture visions of the future?
They are, yeah.
Okay.
They're like these breathtaking paintings of
Okay.
a world made new.
I like that.
They use vivid imagery, poetic language to describe this future blessed state.
Okay.
They focus on peace, prosperity, and joy.
Okay, so one is like a direct intervention. a rescue mission.
Yes.
And the other is more like a glimpse into a future where everything's made right.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah. And both offer hope, but in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One speaks to our immediate need for rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one fuels our longing for a world where things are ultimately set right.
So do we have any examples of these, like, fear not pronouncements, these salvation oracles from other prophets?
Yeah. Isaiah is a gold mine for these.
Oh, okay.
In Isaiah chapter 7, verse 3, he tells King Ahaz not to be afraid of the attacking armies.
Okay.
Sadly, Ahaz doesn't trust God's promise.
Oh.
But then in Isaiah 37.5, his son Hezekiah faces the Assyrian siege.
Okay.
And because he trusts God's oracle, he's miraculously delivered.
So it's the difference between fear paralyzing you and faith empowering you?
Exactly.
Oh.
And then there's Isaiah 43, verses 1 through 3, a powerful oracle for the exiles themselves.
Okay.
Where God assures them of his presence and protection, even in the fiery furnace of their trials.
I love it.
Yeah. He says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned. And the flame shall not consume you.
That's powerful.
It is.
Talk about comfort in the midst of chaos.
Yeah.
But let's bring it back to Jeremiah.
Okay.
Does he offer these kinds of fear not reassurances in the Book of Consolation, especially with all the doom and gloom that comes before it?
He does. And they're especially striking against that backdrop.
Okay.
Take Jeremiah 30.011, for example.
Okay.
Fear not, O Jacob, my servant, declares the Lord, nor be dismayed, O Israel, for behold, I will save you from afar and your offspring for the land of their captivity. Jacob shall return and have quiet and ease, and none shall make him afraid.
Okay, it's like this beacon of hope piercing through the darkness of the exile.
Yes, it is, but it's just a few verses later that Jeremiah describes Judah's situation as completely hopeless.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking.
And that's what makes this promise so incredible.
Yeah.
Verses 12 through 15 paint this bleak picture of their seemingly incurable wounds.
Right.
They're abandoned, they're broken, they're utterly hopeless. Yeah. But then in verse 16, the word Lachan, therefore, introduces this stunning reversal.
Okay.
God declares, therefore, all who devour you shall be devoured, and all your foes, every one of them, shall go into captivity. Those who plunder you shall be plundered, and all who prey on you I will make a prey. For I will restore health to you, and your wounds I will heal, declares the Lord.
Whoa, so it's like saying your situation is hopeless, therefore I will save you.
Yes.
It's like illogical grace.
Yes, it defies human logic.
Wow.
Dr. Yates quotes Tim Keller, who calls it illogical grace.
I like that.
Hope where there should be none.
Wow.
It's this powerful reminder that God's ways are not our ways.
Right.
He delights in defying our expectations.
Oh, man, my mind is blown.
Mine, too.
Okay, well, I'm ready to dive into those salvation portrayals.
Okay.
Those are poetic visions of restoration.
All right, let's do it.
I'm excited about this. Okay, so we're back and we're talking about these amazing salvation portrayals in Jeremiah.
Yeah, these poetic visions of the future.
All right, so give me a good example.
Well, think about that famous passage in Isaiah 11, verses 6 through 9.
Okay.
Where the wolf dwells with the lamb.
Oh, yeah.
The leopard lies down with the goat.
Right, right.
And a little child leads them.
Yeah. It's like a scene straight out of a dream.
It is.
You know, a world where everything is in perfect harmony.
Yeah. It's a beautiful image of universal peace.
Mm-hmm.
A complete reversal of the curse.
Yeah.
And then you have Isaiah 65.
Okay.
With its vision of a new heavens and a new earth.
Mm-hmm.
Where sorrow and pain are gone. Life is long. People enjoy the fruits of their labor.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
It does.
So does Jeremiah offer similar poetic glimpses into this restored world?
He does, and they're just as breathtaking.
Okay, awesome.
Look at Jeremiah 31.1 and 14.
Okay.
It describes the return from exile with singing, with abundance.
Mm-hmm.
Their lives are transformed into a watered garden.
Okay.
A picture of flourishing and vitality.
Yeah, and that's a stark contrast too. Remember that grim image of a donkey's head?
Yeah.
Being sold for silver.
During the siege.
During the siege, yeah.
And now there's feasting, celebration.
So a complete reversal.
A complete reversal of fortune.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
It is.
But, you know, before we get lost in all this beauty and hope, I want to kind of pause here for a second and zoom out a little bit.
Okay.
And talk about, Dr. Yates points out that these promises aren't just isolated to Jeremiah.
Right.
These themes echo throughout the prophets. It's like they're all singing from the same songbook.
Yes, they are.
With these key verses about the return from exile, rebuilding of cities, the restoration of Jerusalem, even the inclusion of the nations in God's blessing.
Yeah, all of that.
So this is bigger than just the Israelites getting their land back.
Yes.
It's like this cosmic restoration setting the whole world right again.
It is.
It's incredible.
And when it comes to Jerusalem, Jeremiah's vision is particularly striking.
Okay.
Look at Jeremiah 31:38-40. It describes the city being rebuilt, expanded, even those places once associated with death and pagan worship, they're going to be made sacred to the Lord.
Wow. Okay.
The whole city, even the darkest corners, is going to be transformed into a dwelling place for God.
It's like taking the most broken parts of our lives,
yeah,
saying, okay, God, this is yours now.
Yes.
Come and make something beautiful out of this mess.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
And you know, this transformation, it's not just about buildings and city walls.
That's right.
It's about the people themselves being made new.
Yes.
Now, remember that central metaphor in Jeremiah, the image of Israel as an unfaithful wife?
Yes.
The wife who keeps betraying her husband by chasing after other gods?
Yes. And because of that unfaithfulness, God has to discipline her.
Right.
But in chapters 30 to 33, we see this incredible shift.
Okay.
God promises to restore that broken relationship and create a new covenant.
Okay.
Where love and faithfulness prevail.
It's almost like he's saying, you know, I know you messed up big time, but I still love you.
Yes.
Let's start over.
Yeah, and the imagery he uses is so powerful.
Okay.
In Jeremiah 31, verses 21 and 22, God tells Israel to set up these road markers, to carefully consider the way back to him.
Okay.
And then he says, return, O virgin Israel, return to your cities.
Okay.
How long will you waver, O faithless daughter?
Mm-hmm.
For the Lord has created a new thing on the earth. A woman encircles a man.
Now, wait a minute, virgin Israel. She's been anything but pure.
Right, and that's the point.
Okay.
It's a picture of God's radical transformative grace.
Mm-hmm.
He takes this woman who has been, as Dr. Yates puts it, a shameless prostitute.
Wow.
And through his love and forgiveness, he makes her new.
Wow.
He restores her purity.
It's like he's wiping the slate clean, giving her this fresh start.
Yes, exactly.
And what about that phrase, a woman encircles a man?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on there?
Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Dr. Yates suggests that it could be a woman embracing a man.
Okay.
A symbol of love and reconciliation. It's like God is wooing his bride back to himself, drawing her into this renewed covenant of love.
So it's not just about God fixing the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's about him restoring intimacy.
Yes.
Rekindling love that was lost.
Absolutely. And this theme of restored relationships goes beyond just the marriage metaphor.
Okay.
Jeremiah also depicts Israel as a rebellious son.
Right, right.
A son who has rejected his father, has run off to do his own thing.
Mm-hmm. And God, like a loving father,
yes,
has to discipline him to bring him to a place of repentance.
Exactly. And in Jeremiah 31:18-20,
mm-hmm,
we hear Ephraim, representing the northern kingdom, crying out in grief over the consequences of his rebellion.
Oh, wow.
He's realizing the depth of his sin. He's longing for his father's love.
It's like the prodigal son finally coming to his senses, yes, realizing he's squandered everything.
And listen to God's response in verse 20. He says, is Ephraim my dear son? Is he my darling child? For as often as I speak against him, I do remember him still. Therefore, my heart yearns for him. I will surely have mercy on him, declares the Lord.
Wow, those words are so tender.
They are.
It's like overhearing a father whispering to his wayward son, I still love you, come home.
Yes, it's a beautiful picture of God's relentless love, his pursuit of his children,
yeah,
even when they've run far from him.
And it reminds us that God's discipline, it's not about punishment for its own sake.
That's right.
It's about refining us, purifying us, and ultimately drawing us back into his embrace.
Yeah, bringing us back into that right relationship with him.
Wow, this is powerful stuff.
It is.
But I kind of want to bring it back to like the larger story of Jeremiah.
Okay.
You mentioned Dr. Yates talking about this central plot, this problem and resolution, right?
Yes, he does.
So what is that?
Well, he argues that the central problem in Jeremiah is this fractured relationship,
okay,
between God and his people, represented by the unfaithful wife and the rebellious son.
Okay.
And the resolution, the climax of the story, is found in chapters 30 to 33.
Okay.
The Book of Consolation, where God promises to heal those broken relationships,
mm-hmm,
and create a new covenant.
Okay.
Where love and faithfulness win.
So the entire book of Jeremiah is leading up to this moment.
Yeah, in a way it is.
Of reconciliation.
Yes.
This grand restoration of God's covenant with his people.
That's a great way to put it.
That's incredible.
It's not just like tacking on a happy ending.
Right.
It's a testament to God's unwavering faithfulness. He relentlessly pursues his people.
Mm-hmm.
He has the power to transform even the most broken situations into something beautiful and new.
I love it.
And that message isn't just for the Israelites back then.
Right.
It's for us today.
Okay, so I'm on the edge of my seat. How does this ancient message speak to our lives today?
Well, Dr. Yates believes that we need to take Jeremiah's message seriously for two reasons.
Okay.
First, because of the warnings of judgment.
Yeah.
Against a godless society. And he sees parallels.
Oh, okay.
Between the spiritual decay of Judah in Jeremiah's time and what's happening in our world today.
Okay, that's a little bit sobering.
Yeah,
but there's got to be more to it than just a warning, right?
Right. The second and even more important reason is that Jeremiah offers this breathtakingly beautiful picture.
Okay.
Of God's mercy and grace.
There's that word grace. Again, I'm sensing a theme here.
Yes, it is the central theme of the gospel.
Right.
And Dr. Yates points out that we experience this grace in two ways.
Okay.
Personally, when we turn from our sin.
Mm-hmm.
And embrace God's forgiveness.
Okay.
And corporately,
mm-hmm.
as God works through his people to bring healing and restoration to our broken world.
So it's not just about escaping judgment.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being transformed by God's grace.
Yes.
Both individually and as a community. It's like this ripple effect.
Exactly. And that transformation starts with acknowledging our need for grace,
mm-hmm.
confessing our sin, and turning back to God. It's allowing him to mend the broken pieces of our lives and restore those fractured relationships
right.
that cause so much pain.
That's good. This is so rich, and I'm soaking it all in. But before we get lost in all these layers of meaning,
yes,
I think we should probably pause here and give our listeners a chance to process all these incredible insights from Dr. Yates.
Yes, let's do that.
So we'll be back soon to wrap up our deep dive into Jeremiah's Book of Consolation.
Yes, we'll be back to explore what it means to embrace this message of restoration in our own lives.
Okay, sounds good.
And how we can be agents of God's healing grace in a world that desperately needs hope.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Jeremiah's Book of Consolation. It's been quite a journey, hasn't it?
It really has.
You know, we've walked through these pronouncements of judgment. We've uncovered these glimmers of hope. We've explored those amazing promises of restoration.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of wondering how we connect all this to our lives today.
Right.
You know, it's easy to get lost in the ancient history and miss the relevance for us right here and now.
Yeah. And Dr. Yates emphasizes that the core issue in Jeremiah,
mm-hmm.
this broken relationship between God and his people,
yeah.
it's something we still grapple with today, both individually and as a society.
So we can see those same patterns, like that unfaithful wife and that rebellious son.
Mm-hmm.
playing out in our own lives and the ways we distance ourselves from God
yes.
and each other.
Exactly. Think about the things that we prioritize over God.
Right.
The idols that we chase after.
Yeah.
The walls that we build instead of bridges.
Mm-hmm.
All of that contributes to that same brokenness.
Right.
That separation from the source of real life and love.
It's like we end up living in this exile state.
Yes.
Cut off from the wholeness that we were created for.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
So if we're living in this kind of exile,
mm-hmm.
separated from God and each other, how do we find our way back to that restored world that Jeremiah talks about?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It can feel overwhelming, you know, like trying to find your way out of a maze blindfolded.
Right. And Dr. Yates reminds us that it starts with repentance.
Okay.
It's about acknowledging our need for God's grace.
Mm-hmm.
Admitting that we've messed up.
Yeah.
It's like Ephraim crying out in grief.
Right.
Over his rebellion.
Yeah.
We need that same humility.
Right.
Recognizing how we've fallen short
mm-hmm.
and hurt ourselves and hurt others.
So repentance isn't just about feeling bad.
Right.
It's about actually turning around.
Yes.
Changing direction.
Yeah, like making a U-turn on a highway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's about aligning our hearts and our actions with God's will.
Mm-hmm.
It's about making choices that reflect his love and his justice.
Okay, and that's where the new covenant comes in.
Yes.
This incredible promise of a transformed heart.
Mm-hmm.
A heart that beats in sync with God's own heart.
Yes, and it's like those fear not promises.
Yeah.
The salvation oracles we talked about.
Yeah.
God is offering us a way out of this mess.
Right.
A path to restoration, both
mm-hmm.
individual
mm-hmm.
and for the world around us.
But it's so easy to feel overwhelmed, you know?
It is.
By the enormity of it all. Mm. I mean, the world is full of brokenness.
It is.
And we face our own challenges.
Yes, we do.
And so it feels like, where do we even begin?
Right.
Like trying to empty the ocean with a teaspoon.
And that's where those glimpses of hope in Jeremiah become so important. Remember those promises.
Yeah.
Of faithful shepherds, a reminded people, a city transformed into a dwelling place for God.
Mm-hmm.
We can embody those promises.
Okay.
In our own circles of influence.
So instead of waiting for God to just like swoop in and fix everything,
mm-hmm.
we can actually participate in his work of restoration.
Yes.
It's more like we're joining a team effort.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Than waiting for this solo performance.
Exactly. We can be those faithful shepherds caring for the people around us,
mm.
leading with compassion and integrity.
Yeah.
We can be bridge builders, breaking down walls of division, fostering understanding and unity.
Right.
We can be agents of transformation.
Yeah.
Taking the broken pieces of our communities.
Yeah.
And with God's help, creating something beautiful and new.
You know, this is starting to feel less like a history lesson and more like a call to action.
Yes, it is.
Those poetic images of a restored Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
they're not just this far-off dream.
Right.
They're an invitation to partner with God in making that dream a reality,
yes.
step by step, right here and now.
That's the power of Jeremiah's message.
Yeah.
It's not just about what God did for his people in the past.
Right.
It's about what he's doing now
mm-hmm.
in our lives, in our communities, in our world.
Yeah.
He's offering us hope. He's offering us healing. And he's offering us this incredible opportunity to be part of his grand story of redemption.
Wow, what a journey this has been.
It has.
You know, we've moved from lament to hope, mm. from exile to restoration.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but I feel like just this renewed sense of purpose and a deeper understanding of God's heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this fire's been lit inside of me to,
yeah.
to be a part of his work in the world.
That's the beauty of these deep dives.
Yeah.
You know, we take these ancient texts, we unpack these layers of meaning, we discover these timeless truths that resonate deep within us.
Right.
And ultimately, we find ourselves challenged and inspired to live out those truths
yeah.
in ways that bring hope and healing to our broken world.
As we wrap up our exploration of Jeremiah's Book of Consolation, I just want to leave you with a question to ponder.
Yeah.
If this section offers a glimpse of this restored world,
mm-hmm.
this world where brokenness is healed, relationships are mended, and God's presence just fills every corner. What does that mean for you today?
Mm.
How can you be a part of bringing that vision to life in your own unique way?
Keep seeking truth, keep diving deep, and keep allowing God's grace to transform you from the inside out.
That's great. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Jeremiah's Book of Consolation.
It's been a pleasure.